Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest Hillary Blair. Hillary Blair, MFA and CSP, is an award-winning keynote speaker celebrated for the energy she brings to the stage, keeping audiences engaged, inspired, and ready to act. As CEO and co-founder of Articulate Real and Clear, she combines over 20 years of teaching, training, and coaching with a professional performance background to help leaders and teams show up, speak up, and connect with impact. A TEDx speaker, the 2024 Vistage Best Speaker Award winner, and a certified speaking professional with the National Speakers Association, Hillary delivers high-energy keynotes that spark clarity, confidence, and authentic connection, equipping audience with tools that they can apply immediately. Hillary, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I have been looking forward to our conversation for quite a while now.
Excellent. Yes, let's do it. Sounds great.
Well, first of all, as customary on the podcast, I like to give shout outs to individuals who connect me with really impactful guest contributors. We got to give a shout out to Carl Becker. I had Carl on my podcast several months ago. And Carl is, among many of his talents, is the author of a book called Iceberg Selling. And we talked a lot about that during his podcast. And after we got done recording, he said, are you interested in you know, any more guest contributors who are very similar in style to me?
Great. Great. All right. We're definitely similar style. Just so people don't get excited that I know anything about sales. I just don't want them to be, you know, misled.
No. But from what I've seen of your YouTube videos and your talks, you know how to sell an audience on a concept, just with your energy,
look at that,
with your presence, and with your enthusiasm and passion.
Cool. I like that. I like that spin. That was a great spin.
Well, we'll keep that in. We'll keep that in. So I won't edit that out. Trust me.
I love it.
Hillary, my first question for you is, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your current life path and your current life passions.
Always mention travel, having had the great privilege and the great honor of being invited around the planet to coach and teach and train. I always am amazed at how much I learn. I can leaf through as many National Geographics as I want, but it's never the same as going and meeting people and having new perspectives on me, the world, simple things, where we walk around and how we eat our food, everything. So travel has been very important and very instructive for me. And then for me, the big change, and I think one of the biggest things for me, was the really beautiful people who helped guide my theater journey, many mentors in that world. And then I always credit this woman, Nell Merlino, for seeing an actor on stage and realizing that the tools that I was using there and how I was showing up would be really helpful for business owners, specifically for women business owners when they were pitching their businesses in a competition called Make Mine a $1 Million Business. So she saw me as a tomato in Tomato Plant Girl and said, you should be coaching business owners. So there you go. Those are the main, there are so many people. I'm influenced every day. So there we go. I mean, you already said something brilliant that's already influenced me. So there we go.
Well, I think we do better together. I think we do better when we are influencing each other. And, you know, my own life path, my transformation is ongoing. And there are some days that people will ask me, well, who are you? Who are you? You know, and there's days that are so powerful for me that the person I was yesterday is not the person I am today, because the transformation can be so stark. But
yeah,
I think as long as we live, we need to be open to be continued to be influenced by those who are going to be in our circle. So
yes,
you said your travel was a big, powerful motivator and influence.
Yeah.
You. Where are some of the places that you traveled that really had the most impact on who you are today?
I would say that one, well, goodness, whoo, they just flooded in my brain. Did you see that happen? They just all flooded right in. So Southeast Asia was very instrumental for me. So having gotten to go there and it was, you know, from Singapore in Vietnam, and it's, I think what was always, what's so great for me always is that, yes, the differences, because I get such insights. It's also just how similar we all are. It doesn't even matter our age. Like, I feel the same way when I meet a five-year-old, right, and a 105-year-old, and people around the globe. And I think for me, traveling that long journey and the amazing program I was on called Wysili, and that I was, my eyes were open, my heart was open, and like, oh my gosh, I've traveled all the way around the globe, and here we are, fabulous people, laughing and joking about similar things. You know, it was beautiful, and worried about similar things with totally different languages and different cultures and different backgrounds. We still were human beings trying to figure out how to show up in the best way, clearest way, kindest way possible. And then I also got to spend 3.5 months backpacking here in the U.S. with a program called Knowles National Outdoor Leadership School. And I was young. That was my junior year in college that I went and spent 3.5 months backpacking. And you know, when you're out for days on end and carrying your weight on your back and a small group, so you get the small group experience and vista after vista of gorgeousness and spending a lot of time in your thoughts, I had a lot of growing that happened there. So yeah, but I have to tell you, Dave, when I travel, I get to, as a Vistage speaker, I get to travel all over the U.S. and I go to the big cities. I love going to little places, and people are, you know, I'm just like, this is a fabulous place. I'm enjoying, you know, I love going to New York City, and I love going to San Francisco, and I live in Denver. I love that. And so meeting people all across our country also, I've now visited all 50 states. So I've got them all down in Puerto Rico. So yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely an accomplished traveler. I know your speaking engagements have taken you all over the country, all over the world. And we can become enriched by other cultural experiences. And you're right, there are differences with cultural rituals and cultural norms. But, you know, the struggle to be genuinely present,
yes,
to be available, that transcends cultural difference.
Yes.
Among the differences, we can always find similarities.
Yes. Yes.
If we look hard enough.
Counting on that. Yes. Yes.
And if we're open enough to look for those similarities, yes, among difference.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, you are involved with the creation of Articulate Real and Clear. Mm-hmm. Tell our audience about the mission of Articulate Real and Clear.
Sure.
Who are the individuals most likely to contract for your services, and what are the services that you provide?
The mission is combining my journey of being a drama teacher. So I joke that I was a drama teacher who put the drama in and now I take it out. And the mission is really about individual voices being shared and helping people, very technical term, so get ready. Our mission is to help people get degunked. So that simply means to help us remove the stuff, that life that we've collected along the way, that has gotten maybe caught up in our gears and our connections, and help people to show up as their full selves, their full awesome selves. So help them degunk and get moving again.
As opposed to debunk.
Oh, right, which is different than debunking. And we might debunk the fact that they have to, you know, that they can't degunk. So we'll do that. I love that.
Yeah, debunk to degunk.
Exactly. That's very good. So I'm just going to keep using you for the marketing now, Dave. This is awesome.
I don't. Yeah, just sign me up. You know, I'm right. I'm ready. Put me in, coach. I'm ready.
Yes.
I'm ready. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. I was just going to say, I realized you had other parts to that. So that's the mission. And so my on the journey, meeting Nell Merlino, who suggested that I move from working with folks in the arts, and she invited me to explore the concept of working with business folks, so people in corporations and businesses and other organizations, and using the tools and the discipline of the performing arts to enhance the voices, not in a fake way, of really elevating people's influence and their voice, that, you know, more of a metaphorical voice, though I do work on literal voice as well, helping their voices be heard. And articulate, real and clear came out of that and came out of this idea of, okay, how we have a bunch of artists coming together and working with business folks. And I've learned a lot, you know, early on, Dave, right, really early on, when I was first starting out, I learned that you don't take business people and like have them lie down on the floor and breathe. You know, they're just not into that. It's a totally different world. And I've had to adapt and be flexible with those tools and the skills involved with those tools to help people on very different journeys show up and be able to connect with themselves and share their voices. And that's what I'm committed to. And voice can be literal, because I am a drama teacher, so it can be literal. How do I help you get your voice so you're not losing it and it's not getting stuck and it's showing up with the music and the prosody that you want? As well as your voice, what's your message? How are you getting shut down? How can we make sure that you're present? And at Articulate, we really work in three main areas. The big bowl of tools and skills have to do with presence, executive presence, leadership presence, business presense, professional presence, however you want to say that, personal presence, all the different communication tools and skills, and then individualized techniques. And how do we apply those to presentations, public speaking, pitching? And how do we apply those to conversations and keeping people in conversation, which we fondly call fruitful friction? Yeah. So then you also were asking who our clients are.
Yeah.
And we really, it seems like it's shifting sometimes. And I felt like pre-COVID and post-COVID, it's almost as if pre-COVID, it was more in the professional services, consultants world. How do we have executive presence and connect? And it has gotten really practical post-COVID, for whatever reason, timing, what's happening in the world. People want really concrete tools. So the businesses have shifted to, we work with a lot of service industry, so a lot of construction folks, a lot of architects. We work with a lot of folks in sales, so different areas that are in sales, so the sales departments within companies, and different sizes as well. We do work with very large companies, and that's been super fun. It's super fun to work with big companies because they have completely different issues they're dealing with. They're dealing with communication on so many different levels, and internal, like how do I talk to my team? How do I talk to my direct report? How many, 3 levels up, 5 levels down? And then you have smaller companies that some of them are family-based. And then you have the fun journey of families and how they communicate in the best of families, the very successful businesses. It's different for, if I'm communicating with you, Dave, as my brother, you know, it's very different than communicating with you as someone that we hired, right? It's just a different thing going on. So I love the journey of meeting different people from different companies. All of them have an openness to saying, what can I shift to connect better? How can I be better at this? I had a really great client a number of years ago, and he said it best. He turned to all of his leaders and he said, I want you to know, I'm self-aware enough to know I'm not self-aware enough. And so those are the best clients that we work with. Self-aware enough to know I'm not self-aware enough.
Well, also those ones that are willing to be accountable, not pass the buck, blame anybody else for their shortcomings. Those are the kind of clients that have unlimited potential, and they have the continued thirst to for self-improvement and for self-direction and also for growth.
Absolutely. And sometimes there's fear, I think, that maybe overused a bit, and yet that idea of fear, and it shows up in so many different ways, and that sense of they often have great people, right? And then there's fear in the way of making a connection. Or I have fabulous people who are like, oh, I was not aware that I was missing that step to connect. So it is, sometimes it's the fear, sometimes it's just, I didn't even know, right? So there's a lot of communication. It often feels like we should know how to do that because we're human beings moving in the world. And communication is definitely one of those skills that we can all be learning better and better techniques to connect with people more clearly, more effectively, more efficiently, constantly working on it.
You know, it's interesting because I was an addictions professional for 27 years in a state-run facility in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And one of the issues, regardless of the presenting problems that individuals requesting services had, an underlying common denominator was difficulties with communication, either assertive communication, consistent communication, active listening, which is a big part of communication. They had difficulties with all of that because those skills weren't modeled for them. So, you know, we're talking about that seems to be a skill that can be improved regardless of what area you're talking about, whether it's business, whether it's public sector, whether it's in a therapy session. Communication is something that has usually been a shortcoming that I've had to deal with.
Yeah. And I think that because we think we should be good at it, we sometimes aren't even aware of where to begin to work on it, right? It's like, oh, what am I doing? We just did a wonderful training with a bunch of therapists who are running businesses. So the other thing is that communication in different scenarios, right? So we have these fabulously successful therapists, and they're also running a business. So how do I work in my profession? How do I work with clients is very different than how do I communicate with my employees or how do I communicate with my vendors, right? And I say very different. Here's the thing. Very different can be a small adjustment, right? So little things are a big deal. And most of the time, simply opening people up to the idea that there might be different ways because they have a different relationship with you. People are like, oh, right? Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. And I just, whenever people ask me questions, I always see face after face going through my imagination of the people I've worked with when they have the ahas, right? Like, right. Or I sometimes call them ahas or duhas, right? Ahas, like you hadn't thought of it. And duhas, like, duh, I totally know that. Like, so, and they both have delightful facial experiences for me when I'm with them. And even when you said, Dave, you said active listening. And I play with words a lot. So for me, active listening, great tool. There's amazing training around it. I have great colleagues who do great work around it. And I also remind folks that we also have to have the openness to hear, right? So active listening, very specific tools, and then open hearing, you know, active hearing. And I'm just playing with words, but words create worlds, so we hear things differently. And sometimes I feel like active listening is so active at someone, and that idea of active hearing is creating a space to receive.
Yes.
And needing both. And it's just words. So it's whatever words work for you. Like some people are like, I like listening. I go, oh, good. That's great. And for me, hearing works well. That's like, what did you hear me? Do I feel heard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always good to check that once you've given a message or have I been heard, and just to ensure that the message was received as it was intended. Yeah. And these are skills that a lot of times I think individuals take for granted because they think, well, they're easy to acquire and I can do it just through simple modeling. It's not easy to acquire. Listening is an art form. And to be good at anything, first, to be able to provide appropriate counsel or suggestions to somebody, you have to be able to listen first.
Yes. And as we move through our careers or whatever our calling is, our jobs, you know, if we liken it to anything else, like I can make myself a meal and eat it and sustain myself. If I want to become a chef, it's a totally different thing. You know, I can walk, but if I want to become a professional runner, it's very different. And those levels of understanding that there is a basic level, and that's, you know, a functional level, and that we can keep taking it to a higher and higher level and deepen our skills. Heighten our skills, deepen our skills. I don't know, whichever image works. Broaden our skills. We're deepening them. We got all of them going on there.
That's it. It's whatever works.
Right.
Whatever works. You mentioned executive presence and working with business leaders and other individuals on executive presence or presence. From your experience, Hillary, what have been the challenges or barriers that business leaders encounter when trying to achieve executive presence?
The number one thing for me is a misunderstanding of what it is, right? What the definition of it. Executive presence has been historically defined by the ingredients instead of the end connection. So what I mean by that is that executive presence and presence in general is about being in relationship and connecting. And all of the elements, eye contact, what we wear, the words we use, our tone of voice, all of those are the ingredients that we use to connect effectively. And when we embrace the concept of, oh, I have executive presence, I'm dressed in a suit, I'm using a certain heightened language, I'm walking in and I am connecting with the key people, we miss out on the opportunity for understanding and living into a much bigger experience of what executive presence is. And so the number one thing is that we use those items to define executive presence instead to understand that they are what create it. So it does matter what you wear. It does matter the words you use. It does matter how you structure what you're saying. It does matter your tone and eye contact, all of those things, verbal, nonverbal messages, those matter. And they matter only in service of the relationship and how you're trying to connect. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing that's connected to it would be that we're really good at keeping walls between ourselves and others. That's what I run into.
Yeah, and I think the walls are kind of created by whatever tapes are playing in our head based on past experiences that we've had in our family. Past experiences that we've had with other business leaders or colleagues, all of that, I think, creates a set of expectations that we kind of effortlessly buy into, and it's easier. And I'm paraphrasing, I think, something from a book by Eric Vance, and I forgot the name of it, but he talks about expectation, how, you know, I'm paraphrasing this, and I may not be getting it totally correct, but that basically, you know, we create a set of expectations based on our experiences, and it's very effortless just to just buy into that narrative, and the behavior just effortlessly follows the expectations that we create for ourselves.
Yes, yes. And when we're in the work world, the business world, we are falling into sometimes even scripts and scenes, and we're stepping into a role that we think we're supposed to play. And being a theater person, that means more than just the job you're doing, but the role and what all the trappings that come with that. And as people move up the ladder, right, the proverbial ladder, they get more suitcases. I call them, they're more suitcases of, you know, more baggage coming, right? The U-Haul just comes in and drops off more baggage for them. And that sense of, which is really mine? What is mine to own? Who am I in this role? Sometimes we lose the people in that. Yep. And I like helping them find themselves again.
Yeah, if we can find ourselves, we can help others find themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, the other thing that you mentioned that I was reading about on your website was fruitful friction.
Right.
What is fruitful friction? Are there components of fruitful friction? And why is fruitful friction necessary for growth, both as for organizations as a whole and for the business leaders and the staff in those organizations?
fruitful friction, hard to say, sometimes hard to do, is the traction that we need to innovate and move forward. Friction has been equated and conflated with conflict for a long time. And often the worlds we're orbiting in and we sense something that might even have a little bit of what we might say tension or disagreement or something. And boom, we just immediately say it's conflict and we back off. Yeah. So fruitful friction is the idea that friction creates pearls or dust, and that friction is that idea of we need that grip. We need that grip to move forward. And when we try to smooth things over, we lose that grip. We slide off the road. And if we're always smoothing things over, we are not getting the wonderful ideas, the new concepts. We're not having Dave and Hillary have a conversation and learn from each other. We are missing out by often going to a land of nice and polite, right? So nice and polite is the avoidance. And polite, I'll toss out, is often the death of progress. It's important. You don't want to get rid of polite. Polite is awesome and helpful in many areas. It is not as helpful as many of us think. It is much more fruitful to use kind and honoring. And kind and honoring means that I'm staying in relationship with you. So we're back to that concept of relationship. In order to stay in conversation, in order to move our project forward, our company forward, our ideas forward. We hire fabulous human beings, and we hire them often because they have all different experience and ideas, and they're coming in, and we want to get everybody in the room. And then for whatever reason, mostly because we have not equipped ourselves with the tools and the skills to navigate differences of opinion and different ideas and different concepts and different ways of even talking, that we tend to then either shut down, we avoid, we leave, whether physically or just in our own heads, or we attack, right? And attack and avoid tend to be two sides of the same thing, which is trying to keep things safe. So I still have in my head the voice of a leader that I worked with over a year now ago, and I was working with him on fruitful friction with his team. And pre-working on our workshop, I was invited to watch his team meeting, his 90-minute team meeting, which I did. He had 12 to 14 members, can't remember exactly, in the room. Great meeting. That ends, right? And we'll come back to great meeting. We're about 20 minutes into the fruitful friction workshop. And I hear, hey, Hillary, I have to disagree with you. And I said, sure. What? And he said, you keep saying we've lost the ability to be in the conversation, to be in the messy middle, which is what we call it. And he said, I haven't lost anything. I have never had it. He said, I am a leader, male leader of a certain age, and I've just been telling people what to do. And he goes, I haven't had the skills to lose them. And it was such a great, I mean, obviously, then we already see what a great leader he is, that he realizes, wow, I don't even have that. And it awoke me to the fact that this concept of living between avoid and attack, this land in between, is the land of opportunity. And too often, we skip over this, and we either avoid or we skip over this, and then all of a sudden, we're in conflict resolution and conflict management and crucial conversations, which are great, great, great programs. Many of those programs developed by colleagues of mine. Great programs. What I have discovered is that we're missing the tools and the construct to simply stay in conversation without immediately being offended, immediately getting angry, immediately whatever those things are, those protections that we go into. What are the tools to stay in the conversation? Now, here's the thing, Dave. There's a big, you know, pause button, which is it has to be a conversation that's worth it. So we say, is this conversation worth, you know, having the traction to get in there, to have the tires, to put the chains on the tires and go in for the traction, right? Or to at least have tires with better tread. There are plenty of conversations that don't need that. Or aren't worth that. I was just with a client And we were working through doing some, we do a lot of role play, real play to try on these tools. He had a scenario, very specific scenario, and he's working through and he came into it thinking this matters to me a lot. I really feel like the way to kind of judge whether you need it is, are we going in circles? Are you spinning? Are things not moving forward? And that was definitely the case. But through the conversation and through exploring it, he realized that person probably was not going to shift, right? That he goes, I needed to play this out to realize this is probably not a conversation, or he definitely goes, this is not a conversation that I need to spend energy on. I need to figure out something else because that is not going to move. So I say that because it's not like every conversation needs to be in the messy middle, friction and all of that. And there are plenty of conversations that are simply transactional, or then it would be just transactional. Hey, you know, Dave, did you get the email? Yes, I did. Move it on, right? And what I truly believe with my deepest heart and soul, and I'm on a mission, is that if we can work on how to stay present, so it goes back to all that executive presence and present workshop I've done in the relationship, which is all the communication work that I've done, and work on how we're sharing our message and how our nonverbals, our voice, all of that is landing on the other person, all the presentation, public speaking, all of that work, all of it comes together with, can we stay in the conversation, the ones that matter? They matter because we're going to move something forward that needs to move forward, whether it's a profound new discovery, whether it's something the team is working on, whether it's a relationship. Like, so I had one client tell me, I went home and had a conversation with my wife that was a year overdue. And it wasn't that he was leaving her. It was not that. It was that he needed to talk about something, but hadn't had the tools to stay in the messy middle, to stay in the conversation. And he went home and had that. And so that moves that personal relationship forward. And I have another guy who said, Hillary, it's all about innovation. Everything you're saying about fruitful friction is that's how we commit and experience innovation, is coming in, connecting, and moving things forward. So you can see, I get super excited about it.
I would too. And it sounds like this is more than just achieving consensus decision making.
Yes.
It sounds like it's also about having good, developing good critical and analytical thinking skills, determining which battles am I going to choose to fight? Which battles are the, it's a done deal thing and I shouldn't invest my energy in?
Yes.
You know, what am I going to pick that's going to be worth putting my beliefs out in front, sticking to my beliefs?
Yes.
While trying to understand the other person's perspective and somehow coming to some type of a resolution that, you know, I mean, it wouldn't be something that we would totally, we're not totally unhappy with. It's something that we can both live with.
Yeah. And, you know, then we have power dynamics that come in. So sometimes someone is going to make a final decision. They still want to hear the information. That's the thing. So it's a lot about how do you create the space to hear that? So we don't come into most business relationships with equal power and status. We don't. So that is a huge component of it. So how do you come into a conversation knowing that you have the higher power, which comes with role and society and all of that? And even though I'm telling you, I'm giving you status, Dave, if I have the power position, it's not going to be equal. And so how do I create that space in which I have made it safer enough for you to share that? And how do I show up in a way that, hey, what are your ideas? Oh, great. Anyway, I've decided this, right? That's a common phenomenon. And we think that we're saving time by doing it. And many leaders feel threatened without even realizing it, that they're inviting in all of these experts. Their job is not to be the expert. Their job is to bring in the voices of the experts and make space for that.
Yes.
And you know something else that I will play with you about, Dave, is that so much of the language around being in the messy middle and being in conversation has a battle feel to it, right? You're like, which battle should we, you know? And we've been inviting into this world, and we've had a beautiful artist, Patty Kingsbaker, who's created this image of a garden. So between avoid and attack is this messy middle, which is really, it has all the organic materials ready, right? It's got everything possible for things to grow. And the idea is that instead of fighting battles. We're really coming in to figure out, how do we have this grow? How do we make this garden work? It comes down to even the terms like devil's advocate, right? A term, I was working with a team and a woman was described as the devil's advocate. And I said, well, maybe there's a different term. Maybe, I like being a devil's advocate. And I said, okay, great. That's perfect. And then we talked about it. And I said, sometimes I use the term, are you a gardener? And she said, oh, no, I'm good with the devil's advocate. And I went on more about gardener. You're in there, you're in the group, you're pruning, you're figuring things out. You have the expertise to make sure that we get the right fertilizer and everything's growing. And we went on, and a couple hours later, it was a long workshop. And she's like, I think I'm going to go with the gardener. Because what it happens is, it's really an energy about being included in, and you're helping people grow. And a lot of these terms have been around for a long time. And I love language. I'm not getting rid of devil's advocate. It's just an understanding that sometimes if people are called a devil's advocate, they don't necessarily want to speak up, because then they're being called the devil's advocate again. Mm-hmm. Versus if they're known to speak up, maybe they're a gardener. Maybe they're the expert botanist being brought in. And it's amazing, because we talk about, all right, everybody, shoot holes in it. You know, we use all that language, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just an awareness that that language in itself may misguide the concept of growing and moving forward.
Yep. And I mean, somebody who takes, let's say, who's very religious, might take devil literally.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of.
You know, yes. And that's something that's a deal breaker for them, and they may not want to engage because of the connotations that it has for their personal faith.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
You know, and I think it's always good to avoid, you know, traditional labels and try to look at terms that mean the same thing but are more empowering.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the other thing that you had mentioned when we were talking about fruitful friction, I just want to backtrack for a second. When you mentioned, and my interpretation is that polite isn't going to cut it in the world of trying to bring, you know, trying to make decisions and trying to, for innovation. I mean, there's been a lot of, Irving Janis had developed a concept called groupthink, and I'm sure you've probably heard of groupthink.
Yes.
12 Angry Men was one of the movies that illustrated that very nicely.
Yep.
Where the focus of the group is on maintaining camaraderie, maintaining agreement. And so essentially what happens is that any type of objective decision-making, which involves disagreement, which involves bringing in different perspectives to make sure all aspects of that decision are being looked at, it gets subverted, and the priority becomes the warm, fuzzy stuff. Let's just just be compliant. Let's be happy with each other. And these are groups that I would call, you would have like a layer cake, a chocolate cake with about 99 layers of frosting on it. Once you got through all the frosting, there wasn't much substance. Or as a colleague of mine said, there's a lot of sizzle and no steak.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, we haven't necessarily equipped, whether it's the 12, now they've done it as 12 Angry People, but the traditional movie, right, in the traditional first play, 12 Angry Men, right? That sense of they haven't necessarily equipped people to realize when polite is putting a wall between us and someone else. So we talk about kind and honoring is staying in relationship, but polite is a wall. And because polite feels safer, and we have a sense that being polite is taking care of someone else, really polite is just taking care of ourselves. And if we don't have the tools and an understanding that it's going to feel awkward, we talk a lot about at Articulate, we talk a lot about rocking the awkward, owning the awkward, right? It is awkward to feel open and connected and not necessarily vulnerable. Vulnerable is a bit overused. Vulnerable is a very important word for me to be aware of myself. But we talk about being available, right?
Yes.
So available can feel super awkward. And you know what's kind of fun about the word groupthink is that in the theater world, the concept of groupthink in improv is when we're all moving together and moving forward. Groupthink is in a lot of ways what we're going for. It's a subtle difference of how we interpret it. So when I first came and I heard groupthink, we're going for groupthink. And they're like, no, we're not going for groupthink. I was like, wait a minute. And so it's been fun for me to recognize that groupthink that is us really connected and really understanding how do we move forward, right, with opinions and ideas versus groupthink, which is we've gone into sort of monotone thinking, right? One thought, we're moving forward. And I love language, so I love that it can be different in both ways. Here's a tough one, Dave, and I think that it's an extreme example. But if we think about the challenger, and the challenger, right? If some of the folks who knew were in that room, because I'm going to talk about the two key things that I think impact when we go to nice or when we go to smooth, okay, which are time and money, right? Time and money. You know, sometimes we also say, so I don't want to lose my job. That connects with time and money, both of those, because we'll waste time looking for a new job and we won't have any money. But time and money drive so many things. And there are, in all the research after, right, there were two people who were concerned that the challenger had a problem. And so when it went up, it exploded. And it's an extreme example, and it's a really sad example. And for us to recognize, not everything has that implication and it doesn't have that life connection to it, not all of it. And yet, what are we backing away from? So two sides to it, to be in the messy middle, it's what am I stepping away and not voicing, even though I know it's really important and I know it will help the conversation or the innovation. And as a leader in the situation, what am I not doing to create a space where that voice can be heard? How do I contribute to that real sense of, yes, I want to hear those, and yes, I may feel awkward, and yes, we'll be in the messy middle, and we always get bumped back. I sometimes say it's a video game. I'm having a great conversation with Dave, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm behind the wall again, and I just have to, you know, reset, put myself back in again. So we will get triggered, and some of us get triggered by the word triggered, so we'll get triggered and bop back. It matters, though, that we create those spaces. And it's not all the time. We're creating intentional spaces where voices with important differences and different ideas and impact and what they see that we don't see come together, because that's what moves us forward.
Yeah, and good leaders will recognize that diverse voices are going to be key to an organization's optimal functioning, and particularly a particular aspect of functioning.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, a leader has to be comfortable enough to kind of, you know, put the power, you know, the power hierarchy down and just say, okay, we're going to distribute the power. I'm going to give everybody as equal a voice as I can, but with the understanding is that it's your input, but it's still my decision. And that's the way it should be.
But and they may not be comfortable, though. You know, we often say that. We'll say they'll be comfortable. They may not be comfortable doing it. They have to own that, though, right? So they have to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And here's the thing too, Dave, is that idea of them saying that, there are so many elements to creating that messy middle to invite that, because sometimes they'll say it and they're like, I can't get my group, they can't get them to step in, step up, right? And sometimes it's more than just the leader, that leader's impact, that it could be the culture, it could be, as you stated at the very beginning, how we're brought up, our impact, how our world, what we're bringing into that space, right?
Well, you know, our personal histories impact how we interact in the workspace, consciously or unconsciously. If you have individuals that are working, that have had ambivalent relationships with authority figures in their own lives, whether it be their family, whether it be their parents, they're going to bring that in.
Yeah.
And if they suspect that they have a very authoritarian supervisor or supervisor that is going to close off any input that may be contrary to the position that they're advocating for the organization, you're recreating those personal dynamics, and that dysfunction in the workplace is going to occur because, you know, that leader either wasn't aware of what was going on with that employee, or their leadership style was just going to basically reinforce the dysfunction that person already brought in, and they would carry over to the workplace.
So I'm gonna check in on this with you. So what I heard was they're coming with it from another part of their life, and yet you still say, you still put it on the leader, that it's the leader's fault.
Yeah, that didn't really come out the way.
That's totally fine.
I think it's incumbent upon us.
Gotcha.
It's incumbent upon leaders to try to find out as much personally about their staff
as they can.
So this way, you know, if they know what personally is going on, if that's impacting at all in the workplace or their relationship, they can at least have a conversation about that and make that part of the supervisory process. So that's what I had meant to get to.
No, it's good. No, it's great. My thing is, because I feel like in the work that I'm doing, and these subtle, it's subtle differences, right? Between the wording on these things and where they are. And it's those little things that I'm watching for and working with folks on, is that a number of leaders will keep blaming themselves, right? And they're like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? So there's that part of it. And it is a dance, right? So it is a relationship. So it's also the sense of, and you know, maybe I don't want to share all my personal stuff. And how do I still come and go, Dave, I need to hear your voice in the space because I know you have a lot of things to say. I don't need to know exactly what's shutting you down.
Yeah.
I do want to know what I can do differently to get your voice heard. What can I shift anything? So it is that, and I'm not saying that's a perfect dialogue at all. The idea though, being self-aware as leader, trying to create a safer space, right? Giving the out to it and then taking it on myself. So what can I do differently? What can I shift in the environment versus putting it on you? What can you do differently? Because I do run into that with leaders a lot. And there are a couple bopping in, Dave, into my head where so well-intentioned. I was thinking of this guy right now. So well-intentioned. And he kept coming back to what that person needed to do. And he finally said, I am not hanging on to the concept that I could adjust some things. It was so funny. Like he had a V8 moment and it was wonderful for him to go, wait a minute, I'm missing the fact that I keep, and it was all from heart. Like, how can I help you? How can I shift? But none of it was like, what can I do? It was so great. It was such a great, it was an aha on his face.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I think you're right. As leaders, it's like, what can we do to create a safe space? What can we do to make sure your voice is heard?
Right.
What can I do to facilitate that?
Yeah. And it's so, the language around it is so subtle. And then I will always come back to time and money. Because that is, people feel like, I don't have time to have these conversations. I don't, you know, we have money to earn. We have money to make. That's the thing. And I was working with a group. And they were just moving from, well, this person isn't working out. I need to get them fired. They were missing this fruitful friction possibility of having the conversations. Power was part of it. They didn't have the dynamics for that part of it. They didn't have the tools for it. Part of it is some of the people felt like, well, I just scare everyone. I'm just too, you know, I'm too much. There's so many things that come into why we don't have these conversations. And the possibility, this land of opportunity long before conflict is ripe or open or fertile and ready for some gardening.
Yeah, it's both of our histories, whether it's the leader or it's both of our histories that come into play.
Yes.
And that's the important piece where I think we have to be aware of it and find ways. How can we transcend it? How can we work with that? How can we understand it and create a safe environment where everybody feels heard?
Yes. Love it. Yes.
I do too. I do too. I do too. I got to ask you your acting experience. And one of the things that I do is with my teaching, I teach at a couple different universities. I teach at Utica University in Utica, New York. And I teach creative artists at the Pratt Munson School of Art, psychology courses. Trust me, I couldn't draw a stick figure without instruction. So it's a couple liberal arts courses, but I've really become aware through my spending time with them about the role that creativity and the creative arts has in just so many different areas of our life. So with that, with your public speaking experiences, how do you integrate your acting experiences or your theater experiences in your public speaking experiences with programs that you do for corporate teams and individuals?
I couple of concrete ways would be that I have my vocally, let's just say that voice wise, I use my voice well, fills the space, you know, and I had voice loss, so I had to really work on it. And a lot of music to my voice, and I invite people, because of that awareness of voice, I invite in certain ways people sharing their voice. So that's one way. That's not the main way. It's kind of this, maybe an undergirding way. I would say also that I don't know if it's my theater or my teaching, because I have been teaching for a long time, or it's my teaching theater. I am really trained to hold space in it when people are feeling awkward. And I hold that space for people to find their thoughts, to move, to open up. So that sense of being uncomfortably, you know, comfortable being uncomfortable and grounding myself and holding space for others to show up, that shows up. On the platform, I have been trained in my body, right, as an actor, right? We're quite embodied in movement, even though I'm not a dancer. I'm what they call someone who moves well. I joke, I'm a move-weller, and I'm not a dancer. And there are very distinct ways to figure out the difference. And that sense of holding the space and understanding where I am in this space, and that everything is about connection to others, not some people say, I move because I feel better. And I'll be like, I don't really care how you feel. What does it do for the audience? So it has to be my move in order to connect with the audience and connect my ideas to the audience. And so it has to be about the relationship. Everything comes back to that. And yeah, that sense of, I think, playfulness from being okay with mistakes. I also think that's big with athletes. So many of the things I'm mentioning are also from athletes, right? Trained in their bodies. And interesting. You mentioned the arts and what you do to combine. My friend Ben Wolf has explored this. He writes for Forbes, actually. He is really fascinated by how the arts dance and come into contact with people who either they have it, they have an artistry that they keep nurturing, and they are, you know, architects or doctors or whatever, or how two different worlds come together, the arts and either the sciences or something else. And he's been really doing some really fun research on that and exploring that. And to hear you say it, I just keep going, yes, 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 yes. We all, Yale Law School just said that they encourage now their people to keep playing instruments, right? Or pursue their whatever, write their poetry, to dance. They encourage their attorneys to not lose their art, to not put it aside because of time, but to keep it going.
You know, the arts are going to sustain us through any type of challenges in our lives.
Yeah.
Whether it's dance, whether it's painting, whether it's music, it's going to sustain us.
Yes.
It's going to sustain us. And I think, you know, the other thing with dance is, you know, with a lot of young adults who have anorexia, mm-hmm. Eating disorders, dance and movement is really helpful. It really helps with those young adults with anorexia or other forms of eating disorders. It takes away the anxiety. It gets them less conscious of their body image. They become more conscious of their body. And sometimes traditional approaches, whether it's in business, whether it's in therapy, sometimes don't cut it. We have to use more non-traditional therapies that may be tailored to the individual's needs. So it might be movement therapy.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Yes. And I always say that playfulness of the performing artist, the drama teacher, the actor, there's a lot of improv. So I do bring a lot of playful games in. And connected to that is a strong awareness, you made me think of it, of the body, right? So I'm aware of body and personalities and how we show up in multiple ways in multiple scenarios, and been studying human behavior as a performer for decades, and then bring all of that into my work with business professionals. How are they showing up to be in relationship? Yeah.
And that would be an interesting interdisciplinary team. If you had somebody like you were looking at behavior from the aspect of performance, you had somebody that was looking at it from the aspect of psychology, somebody else from psychiatry, somebody else from social work, that would be a very interesting, and have some from other complementary therapies like yoga.
And like, yeah, I was going to say in sports, there, right? Yeah.
Sports, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just bring everybody together and share these different ideas that are going to, I think, kind of enrich anything that we do with individuals, whether it's building leaders, whether it's building competent workforces or helping to build competent workforces and workforces that have, you know, high morale and are willing to work with each other and embrace fruitful friction. I think that would be great to have all of these disciplines come together.
Yes.
And to see what we can create.
I love it. I love it. Yes.
Hillary, I could probably spend another 2 hours talking with you.
It's so fun.
Oh, this is fun. But I want to ask you a couple of last questions. The first is, if you could leave our listeners with one ultimate takeaway today. And one, you can do with subcategories. I'm fine with that too. What would that be?
I would say that it is, that connection, it's all about connection, whether it's connection to self or connection to other. And that takes self-awareness and it takes commitment to keep learning and keep growing. We have to connect to ourselves and we have to connect to others. That's what the world needs. We need. Yes. So that's what,
And I would add that I think we need to be secure enough within ourselves to embrace difference, to embrace,
I love that.
You know, embrace perspectives that are different than ours, but at the same time, empower ourselves to take a look at those perspectives and say, which aspects of that can I incorporate into my own life to expand my thinking, to expand my abilities as a leader, to expand my ability as a member of a team.
Yep. Yes. Yes.
So now I'm going to give you the opportunity to promote yourself a little bit.
Okay.
If listeners want to contact you, just find out where in the world you are. Contract for your services. Check out Articulate, Real, and Clear.
Yes.
What's the best way for them to do that?
I love it. Use us. Use us. We the two places that are easiest, our website, which is Articulate RC for Real and Clear, articulaterc.com, and on LinkedIn. I love meeting people on LinkedIn. So we have an Articulate page and my name, Hillary. I only use one L. I know. Why use one when two would, you know, why use two when one would work, right? That's what my dad always said. So LinkedIn and our website, those are two easy places to find us.
Wonderful. And I'll make sure your contact information gets into our episode notes when it releases on YouTube and our other podcast platforms.
Great.
Hillary, thank you so much for just a great conversation. It was just delightful spending time with you today. And I hope we can do this again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Wonderful. Thank you.
My pleasure. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.